Good morning, friends and brethren. So very good to see you this morning. Good to see several visitors with us. We're glad that you are here with us today. I'd like you to take your Bibles. Let's turn to the book of 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 11. We're studying the text about Jeroboam. He built two calves. You might remember some things about the story of Jeroboam, but it's the backstory that tells us some things too, and that's where we're really going to spend a big part of our time. Jeroboam was to become king over Israel. And he knew that because the prophet Ahijah came to him by the will of God and told him that that's what was going to happen. But as we said, as often is the case, there's more to the story than that. And so we go back in time during the reign of King Solomon. Now Solomon was that son of David, King David. And Solomon was a man of great wisdom. He was a man of great wealth. And he was as well a man who disobeyed God. Solomon had a problem with foreign gods. Well, really, it started with a problem with foreign wives. That's where it came from. And it was something that God told him to not do. It was something that God had told his people to be aware of. It identifies here another problem, that Solomon had done what God had said not to do, to marry foreign wives. It's in the text in chapter 11 that the Lord says, "You must not intermarry with them, because they will surely turn your heart after their gods." Chapter 11 and verse 2. But here's Solomon, a man of great wisdom who had obeyed God, who was influenced and turned his hearts to other gods. Well, for one thing, there's a lesson to be learned. Never say, "It can't happen to me," because it happened to Solomon. God said it could happen. But somehow Solomon must have thought he could not be influenced that way. In chapter 11, verse 4, we begin reading, "As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God as the heart of his father David had been. He followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely as David his father had done. On the east hill of Jerusalem, Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable god of Moab, and for Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. He did the same for all his foreign wives who burned incense and offered sacrifices to their god." It's hard for me to even get a picture of this. What happened and what was going on? You have to first conclude that Solomon had a problem. He had a heart problem. No, not that kind of a heart problem. But he had a heart problem. It was a heart problem with regard to his relationship with God. He was not taking to heart the things that God had said. And I'm not sure that I could have seen this coming with Solomon. Because when I first think of Solomon, I think of David's son, a man after God's own heart. I think of Solomon, the one who built the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem, and God's presence filling that temple. But Solomon, how could Solomon walk away from God? But he demonstrates now that he is not fully devoted to God. He did evil in the sight of God. Though some of the things that he did was right first to obey Jehovah God, he did not follow the Lord completely. And we see that now in that he built idols. What more can you say? The fact that he built these idols to satisfy the religious needs of his wives, which he wasn't supposed to have to begin with, and he built these idols, these shrines, they're within sight of Jerusalem, the temple that he had built for Jehovah God. And not just any kind of idols, but some of the most grotesque gods were being worshipped. Solomon not only disobeyed Jehovah God, but he turned his back on God. Sometimes we just have to stop and let that sink in for a moment. Just the events as they unfold and where Solomon's life had degraded to what it was now, that he boldly turned his back on God. Well, the Lord was angry about that. Not a surprise, is it? You can only imagine the disappointment of Jehovah God, and he was angry with Solomon because of his disobedience. verse 9. The Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. Although he had forbidden Solomon to follow other gods, Solomon did not keep the Lord's command. So the Lord said to Solomon, "Since this is your attitude, and you have not kept my covenant and my decrees, which I commanded you, I will most certainly tear the kingdom away from you and give it to one of your subordinates. Nevertheless, for the sake of David, your father, I will not do it during your lifetime. I will tear it out of the hand of your son. Yet I will not tear the whole kingdom from him, but will give him one tribe for the sake of David, my servant, and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen." So now we're getting a bigger picture of some things as they are unfolded. Here are the consequences of sin. We've said before, there are always consequences. And Solomon has sinned in such an incredible way. And there are consequences for that. You remember when Moses in the wilderness, remember when he struck the rock as opposed to speaking to it to bring water to the children of Israel? And then he didn't even give credit to God for the water that came forth. You remember that? There were consequences for his sin. And the consequence was he was not able to enter into the promised land. A few weeks ago, we studied some about King Saul and how King Saul rejected God's instruction to kill all of the Amalekites, the enemies of the Israelites, and God rejected him as king because he disobeyed God, because he was unwilling to follow through with the things that God wanted him. You see, disobedience, there will always be consequences, and sometimes the consequences are far-reaching. It's the same thing with Solomon's disobedience. Little known to Israel at this time would be the far-reaching effect of Solomon's sins. And no doubt, the influence of Solomon building the high places for the gods of his wives was running its course. We think that only the wives of Solomon would take part in that? Oh no, there's influence that comes from that. And even the fact that the king Solomon had built these high places for these gods, surely there was others who participated in this worship as well. And what would you expect? That some would follow in the direction of the king? And it was all leading in a direction away from God because Solomon had turned his back on Jehovah God. It's amazing for me, as I said a moment ago, I just can't even hardly picture that on the east side of Jerusalem, there were these shrines, these temples, these high places that were constructed for these gods of the people. Well, where does all of this lead? We introduce in the story then Jeroboam. Jeroboam was an administrator in Solomon's kingdom. He was in charge of the labor force. He had proven himself to be effective in the work he did, and people would follow him. And he was able to do and accomplish the things that the king wanted done. And so he became that trusted leader of Solomon. And then something significant happened. Now, I don't think this was a chance meeting, but Jeroboam met a prophet of God. Chapter 11, verse 29. About that time, Jeroboam was going out of Jerusalem. And Ahijah the prophet from Shiloh met him on the way, wearing a new cloak. And the two of them were alone out in the country, and Ahijah took hold of the new cloak he was wearing and tore it into 12 pieces. And he said to Jeroboam, "Take 10 pieces for yourself, for this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. See, I am going to tear the kingdom out of Solomon's hand and give you 10 tribes. But for the sake of my servant David in the city of Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, he will have one tribe." Okay, so we're getting a picture of this, that the prophet speaking to Jeroboam. And Jeroboam going, "What? I mean, me? This is going to happen to me? And this is what Jehovah God has said? This is what's going to happen?" And you know, Jeroboam is going to have 10 of the 12 tribes, and Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, is just going to have 2, Judah and Benjamin, which will just be called Judah as we go forward. You know, are we understanding why this is happening? You see, this is happening because of Solomon's disobedience. The far-reaching effects of sin sometimes, turning one's back on God. Sometimes we can't forecast where that's going to lead or who it might even take with us. Let's understand our own influence. Like Solomon, he was the king. And God had appeared to him. And so he had influence. And so when Solomon sinned, there were others who would be influenced because of that as well. And so in verse 33, he went on to say, I will do this because they have forsaken me and worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, and Molech, the god of the Ammonites, and have not walked in my ways, nor done what is right in my eyes, nor kept the statutes and the laws as David, Solomon's father, did. Okay, Jeroboam, understand why God is calling you out. Here's what the Lord says. This is happening. I mean, the kingdom is being removed from Solomon because of his sins. And Jeroboam must have stood out in a favorable way in the eyes of God for these things to be unfolding this way. And so soon, Jeroboam is going to be king over Israel, the 10 tribes to the north. Verse 37. However, as for you, I will take you and you will rule over all that your heart desires. You will be king over Israel. If you do whatever I command you and walk in my ways and do what is right in my eyes, by keeping my statutes and commands as David my servant did, I will be with you. I will build you a dynasty as enduring as the one I built for David and will give Israel to you. I will humble David's descendants because of this, but not forever. You will be king over Israel. That's what God told Jeroboam. If, and you catch this part, if you obey my statutes and my commands. You know, God has always said that. I mean, always there's been that if. If you obey me, you will be my people, and I will be your God. How many times has God said that? And so Solomon learned about what the prophet Abijah had said to Jeroboam. He's not happy. In fact, he tries to kill Jeroboam. I mean, Solomon's action is not going to change God's plan. You know, Solomon is trying to kill Jeroboam, much like Saul tried to kill David. But it's not going to change God's plan. So Jeroboam fled to Egypt and he stayed there until Solomon died. And Solomon died because death will come to all men. Chapter 11, verse 41, the text tells us here about the events of Solomon's reign and how these things are all recorded in the annals of the king. But the fact of the matter is, Solomon died and Rehoboam, his son, succeeded him as king. But you know, he sought some advice from some folks that he shouldn't have, and he accepted the bad advice, and then the people rebelled. But there's a whole other story there. That's for another time. But understand that Solomon's son, Rehoboam, is going to be rejected as king, and Jeroboam comes back into the picture again, and the people choose him to be king of the 10 tribes to the north. Rehoboam maintains the two tribes to the south. It's just as God had said. Those things came apart, just as the prophet Ahijah had predicted. And so now it looks as though things are going well for Jeroboam. I mean, he's king over the larger portion of Israel. He has the blessings of God. He is in the place and the position he is in because of the blessings of God. Chosen by God to lead his people. And you think about what God said, how everything would be on his side. He would build a dynasty for him. If you walk in my ways. But all is not well in Israel. Jeroboam builds two calves. There's a little bit more to that story. See, remember, Jeroboam came to the throne because Rehoboam had listened to some bad counsel regarding taxing the people. But no, really, in the bigger picture, Jeroboam became king because Jehovah God had rejected Solomon. And he rejected Solomon because of Solomon's sins, because he had turned his back on God. There should be some lessons from that. You would think that those who are wise would look at what were the failures of the king before and what separated him from God. And why was God choosing Jeroboam? Surely he would think about these things, wouldn't you suppose? And see that when Solomon turned his back on God, things did not go so well for him. So the prophet had told Jeroboam the criteria for being the king that God would bless over Israel. Could I read that part again, verse 38? Because this just seems to be a standout point to me. If you do whatever I command you and walk in my ways and do what is right in my eyes, keeping my statutes and commands as my servant David did, I will be with you. I think I'm getting the point of what the Lord is saying. That you will be the king of my people and I will bless you and I will build a dynasty for you and if you obey me. If you lead my people in the way I want them to be led. Jeroboam had a short memory. And soon he did not remember what God had said, or he just did not care what God said, what God had told him, what God had required of him. And Jeroboam made the foolish choice of listening to the counsel of men. Well, we've been down that road before. It's part of what got Solomon in trouble. And it's what got Rehoboam in trouble. And now it's getting Jeroboam in trouble because he has listened to the counsel of men rather than following the instructions of God. Chapter 12, verse 26. Jeroboam thought to himself, "The kingdom will now likely revert to the house of David. If these people go up to offer sacrifices at the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem, they will again have their allegiance to their lord, Rehoboam, the king of Judah, and they will kill me and return King Rehoboam." After seeking advice, the king made two golden calves, and he said to the people, "It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Here are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. One he set up in Bethel, the other he set in Dan. And this thing became a sin. And the people went even as far as Dan to worship the one there." Getting a picture of this now? We've talked about the problem with Solomon turning his back on God and not listening to what God said and worshiping the foreign gods. And here's Jeroboam, who has some fear that he's going to lose his kingdom because when the people from the north go down to Jerusalem, he's afraid that they'll accept Rehoboam as the king and they will kill him because they've gone to worship Jehovah God. There's a sad pattern. The counsel of men led to worship of foreign gods again, just like it happened before. You have to think about Jeremiah. You want to just say, what is he thinking? I mean, what is wrong? Has he already forgotten the reason that God took the kingdom away from Solomon? His sin? Solomon's disobedience? The foreign gods? The counsel of men? Jeroboam did just as he desired, and he set up gods to appeal to the people. And the people followed that. Verse 31, it says, go to verse 30, it says, "And this thing became a sin. The people went even as far as Dan to worship the ones there. Jeroboam built shrines on high places and appointed priests from all sorts of people, even though they were not Levites. He instituted a festival on the 15th day of the 8th month, like the festival held in Judah. He offered sacrifices on the altar. This he did in Bethel, sacrificing the calves he had made. And at Bethel also he installed priests at the high places that he had made." I mean, He's doing everything. He's basically doing everything that Jehovah God has said not to do. And you think about his reasoning to the people. Oh, it's too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. See, he knew and understood the significance of Jerusalem through the years. And the temple that was there that represented the very presence of God. For your convenience, he says, it's just too much for you to go there and appeal to man's interests and what works for him. Boy, it is so easy. It is just so easy to do what others want to do. It is so easy just to worship the way other people want to worship. It is so easy to disregard the commands of God. It's so easy to just do whatever man chooses to do. And what we fail to see is that when we come up with our own ideas and methods of worshiping God, it is nothing more than turning our backs on God. And we have seen that to be a problem of those who would claim to be the people of God throughout the generations. It's always been a problem. It's always been an issue. And when we choose to write our own means and methods of worshiping, it's no more pleasing to God than if we were to carve out an idol of stone and set it before us and bow down. It would all mean the same to God. Satan wants us to minimize the differences. He wants us to find excuse for the ideas that men promote for new and exciting worship, but ignore what God says about how He wants to be worshiped. And Jehovah God expects that those who would be His people would walk in His ways. That's what He has always said. That's what He has always commanded. And to do anything less than that is to disobey God and to be separated from Him. When we think about the ancient city of Dan, Ray, can you turn that on back there? We think about the ancient city of Dan on that very far side of Israel, the far northern side of Israel. We can see it's a long way from Jerusalem down there by the Sea of Galilee. And this is where one of the idols was set up. You had one that was set up, you know, here in Bethel. And Jeroboam, he was reigning from Shechem right here. And all the way up here is Dan, from that very northern part of Israel. And I suppose we can even understand what some thought when Jeroboam sent out news, it's too far for you to go to Jeroboam. You can just go to Dan right here. And don't you imagine that there were some that very quickly and readily accepted that, yes, this is a whole lot better. It's a whole lot easier. The ruins of Dan are well excavated. When we were in Israel, this is one of the most interesting places for me to go because you can see so much. There is so much that has been revealed. And you can walk on some of the very streets that you have some assurance that some of our ancient fathers, so to speak, walked on. And these places provide some of the details of those who lived long ago, including the Israelites and Jeroboam. But the city of Dan goes back even before Jeroboam's day. It was a very old city at that time because even Abraham came to the city of Dan when he was chasing the enemies of his nephew Lot. Genesis 14 says that Abraham went as far even as Dan. And the old gates to the city have been uncovered. It could have been the gates here that Abraham walked through in his day. But in the day of Jeroboam, on the opposite side of the tell, were the modern gates of the city, the modern walls that are very well defined, and the gate where you're led into the city, where that arrow is. And you can see the way the city was fortified well. And I suspect that the walls were much higher in that time. But you'd go into the gate here of the city, the courtyard and the entrance, And you are just taken by the fact that Jeroboam may have been sitting on that seat at the gate right there at some time. Because sometimes the judges and the kings, they would sit on the gate of the city, and that's what the gate of the city was. And that's where the seat for the gate of the city would be. Just a couple of references of like when David sat at the gate of the city when after the death of his son and when he was welcoming his troops back. Or we can even find that the king of Israel and the king of Judah in the days of the divided kingdom sat at the city gates of Samaria. And so we get a bit of a picture of our mind of what that was and what it was like. But that gate going into the city is interesting. Because the city, as we said, would have been well fortified. This was your entrance in the city. And it could be locked down. In fact, there may have been several gates. Because just inside the gate, you can see these areas that's divided off and evidence that there were multiple gates that could be open and closed. And it was here that the merchants were doing their tradings. Perhaps there was cattle that was inside these gates that were being traded. And it reveals something even about the power of the city and why Jeroboam would go there. And when you walk through the gates of the city, you can come out of the city on the other side. And this was the most interesting thing to me. And many of the city streets that we could see and walked on were surely in place in the time of Jeroboam. And you could walk through a forested area on the backside of the city as you continued to kind of go up a rise. There was a slight change in elevation as you came through the city. And as you left the city and came through a forested area behind, crossed over a tributary that would lead into the Jordan River, and you'd go a little farther and you'd come up a rise to a place of worship where what has been uncovered here is a place of an altar and a high place. I wonder what was there. It's interesting to think about when this was built and why it was built. We know that Jeroboam built a high place in Dan, and that he did so for the purpose of the golden calf. One is in Bethel, one is in Dan. That it was in place here so that there could be sacrifices that was offered as they bowed down before their God. And the stones, the foundation of the altar, are very well defined. What's built on top of the altar is something that's very modern, just to give a depiction of where the altar would stand and what it, perhaps the size of it or things of that nature. But the foundation, the block that is there, is very old, perhaps of those days of Jeroboam. But what was most interesting to me, what was behind it? Maybe the place of the sacrifice should have caught my attention more. But it was the high place that was behind it that captured my attention. And the steps that went up there on it. And that high place up there was a pretty good size, maybe 50 feet by 100 feet. It was very large, where if there was just one calf up there, there could be a lot of people up there bowing down before the calf after they've offered their sacrifice, I would suppose. But again, it's the steps going up that captured my attention. And only because someone drew my attention to it. And as we were standing there for a moment and we're trying to envision what was going on those generations ago, when Jeremiah had introduced this worship of a golden calf and the people were told, "This is your God that brought you out of Egypt." The children of Israel are those who had been assembling there and looking at that calf, and someone said, "Which way are we facing?" Well, I didn't know. I had to stop, and I was trying to think. Well, the sun's over here, and it looks like it would set there. And pretty soon we determined, well, that's north. That's looking north. You come up the steps, and you are looking north. Well, what's the significance of that? Where's Jerusalem? To the south. You remember when Daniel had been taken captive by the Babylonians? And you remember when the decree had been made that no man could pray to any king except Darius. You remember that? And David went to his house every day three times and opened the windows, and he faced toward Jerusalem. And he prayed every day. He understood the importance of the city and all that it had meant to God. You remember now with Jeroboam, Jeroboam did not even want the people to think about Jerusalem, because it may be a draw to them to go back to Rehoboam or to be drawn near to God. And so he built a high place, and he built a golden calf, and he placed it on this platform, and worshipers would come there, and they would face the north even, the opposite direction of Jerusalem. Was the direction intentional? I don't know. But it's interesting. And it's a powerful symbolism, isn't it? That as they were worshiping the golden calf, that they would have their backs turned to God. And that's just powerful. There's application that we can make. There's a lot of applications we can make. The idea of convenience. Worshiping like others worship. The idea of just worshiping as we choose. All of these ideas have long impacted the ones who would say that they are the people of God, even today. Oh, it's too much for you to go up to Jerusalem, Jeroboam said. Well, is it too much for us to just do the will of God? It's always been a challenge for men. Will we ever be satisfied to just listen to what God commands and to accept it and obey it? It's always been a challenge. But it's what God demands. And God's promise to Jeroboam, and you shall reign over all your heart desires, and you shall be king over Israel. Then it shall be, if you heed what I command you, walk in my ways and do what is right in my sight and keep my statutes and my commandments. That's what God said to Jeroboam. And that's what he has always said to those who would be his people. Let's understand the significance of Jeroboam's leadership. It bears the mark of leading Israel further away from Jehovah God. Basically, what Jeroboam was saying is, it doesn't matter how you worship. That's what he was saying. One way of worship is just as good as another. One God is just as good as another. Basically, Jeroboam was saying, God's law is of no consequence when His commandments are inconvenient to us. That's what he was saying. Jeroboam basically made a mockery of God's law, and Israel fell for it. And when we read about the history of Israel in the years that are to come, we can see and we can realize that Israel never again turned to God. And we can see the turning point. We can see the day when the king turned his back on God and when so many followed him. You know, there's a very powerful ecumenical movement today. Now, that basically says it does not matter what you believe. It does not matter how you worship. It does not matter what your doctrine is. As long as you worship God, everything is fine and God will be satisfied. That's the ecumenical movement that has permeated our society and is encroaching its way into the Lord's church. And it's a problem. A friend of mine is preaching in a church right now where, well, he won't be preaching there much longer. What he is preaching comes straight from the book. And there are some there, including one of the elders there, who is preaching some things that come straight out of some ecumenical books that basically say, you can believe what you want to believe. The Lord's church is being challenged, as it has always been. And one of the greatest challenges that's coming up on us today is this idea that is that you can be saved in this church, you can be saved in that church, you can be saved in this church. What about Christ's church? The Lord is very specific about who are the saved and how one is saved and to what church one is placed when he is saved. And when we accept and when we promote doctrines that says, well, doesn't really matter what you believe. It doesn't really matter how you worship God. What we are doing is what has happened through the generations. We have turned our backs on God. And it will lead to our destruction eternally. It's what God has always said. God has never changed His doctrine. God has never changed His views. Can we just accept what God says? Jesus, recalling those who were before Him, said to the Pharisees, who were giving Him such grief, hypocrites is what He called them, well did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying, these people draw near to me with their mouth and honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. It's not a new doctrine. Isaiah said it before Jesus quoted it. It has always been an issue for man. It is still an issue today. We will have to decide where will we stand. This much I am assured of. That when we turn our back on God, He notices that. And we will be separated from Him now and through eternity. We will have to choose, as Jeroboam had to choose, and Solomon before him. Where will we stand, and with whom will we stand? We should choose to stand with the Lord. In Him only is our hope. If we'll be submissive to Him, obedient to Him in faith, becoming a child of God with baptism for remission of sins, and to walk with Him faithfully, will you do that? Do you need to respond? Would you come as we stand and sing?